Barry Blitz cartoons have been lampooning American politics and culture for decades, as iconic New Yorker covers are defining images for our times, earning him adoration from critics and fans and piles of hate mail from everyone else. The new book, Blit, is the definitive collection of Barry Blitz's work from The New Yorker, as well as his private sketchbooks, drafts, and rejected illustrations, offering readers an illuminating view into his creative process. It is a great pleasure to welcome Barry Blit to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it, too.
It's very nice to have you with us. What is it like to put together a collection of your work, to say, I would like people to see this in a collected, curated fashion?
I never said those words, I'd like people to see this, but it's nice to have the sketches that no one sees published, for one thing, and it is interesting to put everything together. I got a call from an editor who suggested the book. And it's probably the objective of any illustrator or cartoonist to publish a tome of their work, but it did sort of surprise me that the project was suggested, and it's a nice thing to have. How was that for stammering over the experience?
No, I think it's understandable. I would think it would be very difficult. I've heard some people talk about collections of their work, whether they be cartoonists or poets or fiction writers, that it's a lot like attending your own funeral and listening to what people say about you.
Yeah, there's something funereal about it. And when the books were delivered to me, I could barely look at them. I've managed, on the way over here, actually, I flipped through it, so it's nice to see that it was, printed nicely, and I'm sure I'll appreciate it. Once work dries up, it'll be nice to have.
Do you anticipate that, work drying up?
Every day.
What is there, do you think, currently that seems to be far removed from where you are, in the sense that people like what you do, they ask you to do it, and there is an appreciation for the work that you are doing? Because right now, people are appreciating your work, and what do you make of that, and what do you think there is about your work that is striking a chord with people?
I have no idea why my work is striking a chord with people. Well, I mean, there's certainly a lot of juicy targets around. I mean, it's the time of Donald Trump, and I think that it's lifting all cartoon boats, as it were. A lot of it's ideas are and metaphors are right there on a plate for you. So that's certainly making it easy for everybody, I think. I mean, it's not in life, but in cartoon life at the drafting table, there seems to be an abundance of metaphors there. So
when you look at the covers that you have done for The New Yorker in particular, and many they're represented here in this collection, how does that process work? Do they come to you? Do you go to them? How does that work, especially on a timely issue?
Well, I mean, I've been pitching covers to The New Yorker for a long time, I guess since 1994. And the way it's worked in the last 10 years anyway is an email will go out to the usual suspects, to regular contributors, who artists who do covers, saying, it's looking like a summer impeachment, say. It'd be great to have ideas for that. So people will pitch ideas. And aside from that, there's often a call to just send stuff in when you have it, So you get an idea and you just send them over there. And that starts in a sketchbook. It just starts with trying to make myself laugh sitting with a sketchbook and trying to come up with ideas for stuff that outrages me or interests me or something that catches my interest. And so I do very rudimentary drawings in a sketchbook just to get the idea, put it down on paper. It's like writing notes or voice memos or something. And then I'll draw it a little bit more comprehensively so that another human can recognize what's going on in the picture. And I scan those, send them in, and then if you're lucky enough to get the green light, then in my case, I sort of go nuts and tense up and draw the thing a million times or as much time as there is involved. I'll do as many versions as I can. If I have 2 days, I could probably, you know, do several watercolors in that amount of time. If there's only a few hours, like does happen sometimes, you know, I might be restricted to one or two versions, but I'll send in final artwork and then it hits the newsstands.
When you are in the process of working on that final artwork, at what point do you, if you had another 2 days, would there be that many more drawings, or do you know when it's done?
My judgment is bad. I mean, it's I've done a lot of covers. I mean, more than I ever expected to do, and I still, each one is a nervous experience, and it's an exciting experience, and there is panic involved. So when I do get the green light, I'll start one, I'll get several, you know, I'll get halfway through it, and then I think maybe I could have drawn the hands better, or maybe that could look a little bit more like Rex Tillerson in the corner there. So I'll start it again, and then the second one maybe the hand is better or the likeness is better, but then the first one looked fresher to me. So I think I'll start a third one, and maybe I could combine what I like about those first two. And you can see that process is fraught with peril, because I end up, the first one is usually the best drawing anyway. Even if the likenesses aren't necessarily the best, there's something about a natural line that's not worried about that makes a drawing a good drawing. And so, unfortunately, I should take my own advice and just stick with the first drawing, finish it, and then if I want to make myself crazier, go on to the next one. But I haven't learned to heed my own advice yet. I'm only 59, so I've got time.
Why start now? Sure. There is a cover in here from 2014 where you have President Obama giving medicine to Mitch McConnell. And your comment here is, not sure what I was thinking regarding Obama's legs. So you still look back at these and say, oh, maybe I would have done the legs different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, any person familiar with human anatomy can see that they look like ventriloquist dummies' legs.
But it's interesting to me that you didn't, did you not realize that at the beginning, or it wasn't the focus, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think with a drawing like that, there's Obama, and there's McConnell, and there's Cruz, and there's quite a few likenesses in it. So I probably was obsessing over the likenesses, and once I got those, I was probably delighted with myself and finished it, you know, haphazardly, and only when I looked at it afterwards did I realize, you know, I sort of worked myself into a corner with the space I had allotted for his legs. I'm not sure what led to that, and it would be great if we didn't talk about it anymore. But there it is on the cover.
There it is. Let me ask you about the famous fist bump cover with Michelle and Barack Obama giving the fist bump. This was a cover that made headlines. It made headlines, and it was from July 21st, 2008. Give us a sense of how that came about and what your reaction to the reaction was.
Well, how it came about was... Senator Obama was running for president, and there was lots of stuff being said about him and his wife Michelle, lots of awful stuff. I don't restrict myself. I mean, I consider myself a lefty, but I listen to, you know, I go to Drudge and I listen to Rush Limbaugh when I can stand it. I try and get as many viewpoints as I can. And there was really a lot of stuff being said about Obama, and not only on the right. And so I In a moment of perhaps insanity, I scribbling in my sketchbook, I thought it would be funny to you know, create a picture with everything that was being said about him. So I had him dressed as a Muslim terrorist, and there was rumors about a tape, of course, that never surfaced, that never existed, of Michelle saying "kill Whitey" or something. So I drew her as a sort of a militant Black Panther. And for good measure, I stuck an American flag burning in the Oval Office fireplace. And anyway, it seemed funny to put it all in one picture. And New Yorker's art editor Francoise Mouly got the joke, and the New Yorker editor David Remnick got the joke, and we went ahead with it. And I remember I brought the I was real late with that one. It was a last minute idea, and I brought the actual artwork in with me to the office, and Françoise and I stood, and she held it up and said, "This is going to, you know, change all that stuff they're saying about him. This is going to put the lie to everything." And, you know, we thought we were doing something noble. And obviously the reaction was, you know, no one thought it was particularly noble. Both McCain and President Obama and candidate Obama slammed the drawing, and pretty much no one liked it. Until a few days later when Jon Stewart on his show, you know, sort of defended the drawing and criticized the hand wringing over it. And then it seemed to, the tension seemed to dissipate. But for those first few days, you know, I was off of solid food. It was rough. I got a lot of emails that I learned at that time that an AOL inbox will only hold 1,000 emails, because mine went to 1,000 right away. And I tried to answer each of them and you know, plead with people and explain my case, which was fruitless. But anyway.
You have some sketches in the book from the earlier sketches that led to the cover. And in those early, I guess what it's the earliest sketch, Michelle isn't in that, right?
No, Michelle is in that. She's dressed also as Barack is. And in an early sketch also, you've got a window with from outside looking aghast into the Oval Office are Rush Limbaugh, Ann Coulter, Bill O'Reilly, you know, like this is their worst. But it seemed like that was an extra step that maybe we didn't need. With 8 or 9 years gone by, the covers. I'm fine with the cover now.
But the idea that your artwork at all, much less a cover of a magazine, is being discussed on a late night comedy show and is making headlines. I can certainly understand the not wanting solid food for a while, but by the same token, it is quite extraordinary to have that happen.
Yeah, it's better to be talked about than not talked about at all, or whatever that guy on Monty Python said.
When you think of, I know you often you tend to ask these questions of people. I don't know, you ask them of impressionists and things of. Are these people easier to do, or what do you make of when this person comes into office? So when you look at President Trump, when you looked at President Obama, I mean, do you root for it in a comedic sense or in a illustrative sense of what you're able to do with that particular figure, that particular character in our national discourse?
If you're asking me if I rooted for Donald Trump because he's just fantastic to draw, I did not. I was crestfallen when he won.
No, all my point meaning that you look at it and you say, okay, well, this is obviously someone, even when he came onto the political horizon, that you can say, oh, well, here's somebody that I can have fun with.
It does seem almost like one of the qualifications or one of the necessities of to become a national figure, let alone president, you almost have to be caricaturable. There's something about consuming public figures that they look a certain way, and because that's the only thing I can think of. Any president I can, you sit down and draw, they're all almost ready-made caricatures. Trump particularly, but Obama's great to draw. I didn't think so when I first started drawing him, but he became quite easy to draw. And George W. Bush for sure, and Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton. I mean, they're all caricatures, I think. I'm not sure what that says, but Trump most of all.
The two covers that I would like to ask you about in the time that we have. One was my favorite, and I think when I first became really familiar with your work, was the cover for The Producers. The Producers hits Broadway. Wow. It is a hit. Mel Brooks. And you have a cover of a crowd just laughing and having a great time, applauding. And there in the center is Adolf Hitler, who has his hands crossed and looks very upset. What went into that? And what, because I assume whenever you bring and Hitler, there's going to be a discussion at some point in the editorial meeting, right?
Right. I mean, that was the first genocidal maniac I drew on the cover of The New Yorker, but I've been lucky enough to have a few. The funny thing about that one, it sort of illustrates a point that Françoise at The New Yorker and I have. She always encourages me to not self-edit and send her whatever I've got. And it's led to me sending her some very crazy stuff that obviously is unpublishable, but she'd rather have everything and then she can decide, you know, what will go on. And in that case, I remember that the obviously The Producers was an enormous hit and it was worthy of a New Yorker cover, it seemed. And I drew Hitler in a sketch like that with sitting sullenly in a raucous audience. And then I thought, this won't work with Hitler. So I stuck a patch on top of it of a skinhead, a Nazi skinhead. I thought maybe we could get away with that. And I sent Françoise the sketch. And she said, it's a good idea, but, you know, obviously, wouldn't it be better if it was Hitler? And I said, oh, yeah, and I just peeled off the skinhead, and there he was. And so that's how that image came about, and then I drew it several times. It seems like an awfully long time ago.
Well, and there was one, I'll ask you about another one that was even longer ago, that was 5 years prior to that, in 1996, which is the cover in Times Square of the two male sailors kissing, at that time, and what went into the discussions that went into that particular cover.
I don't remember many. I think that was just like a self-generated idea. It was Don't Ask, Don't Tell was in the news, and I guess it was around VJ Day, obviously that Eisenstadt picture of the sailor grabbing the woman in Times Square, pulling a Harvey Weinstein on her, and it seemed like a funny idea to update it and put a second sailor there instead of the nurse that was being grabbed, and the idea flew. It was Tina Brown was the editor at that point. It was the first controversial cover I'd been involved in, but it was sort of pre-email for me, so I was getting phone calls, which emails are easier to take than an angry phone call.
You did illustrations for The Adventures of Mark Twain of Mark Twain by Huckleberry Finn, right? Is that?
I did a book by Robert Burley, a kid's book.
And you say in this book that Mark Twain sure is fun to draw. You have those things that just are fun to draw. What would make something fun to draw?
Well, I mean, again, he's another like American icon, another character who, you know, is not hurt by the way he looks. And he's, you know, he's obviously got the mustache and the shock of white hair and the way he dressed. I mean, he was, and the cigar, you know, he's a walking caricature as much as, you know, Bill Clinton is or Donald Trump is, I think.
It's always fun to see the rejections, and this book is no exception in that. You have a cartoon for The New Yorker that was killed at the last minute about Anthony Weiner. Tell us about it and why ultimately it was rejected.
Right. That was, I think that was only in the first Anthony Weiner scandal, so there was still some sympathy for him. And I think there was a time at the beginning where it seemed like he might do harm to himself. So I think that might have been behind the reason it was pulled. And I'm not sure. Are you referring to he's hanging himself with a string of
sausages?
Of wieners?
Yes, of wieners. Sausages, yes,
wieners.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there is another one that's a little more distasteful that I believe is in the book.
Do you have to rein that in at all? I mean, is the impulse to do what you think is funny, or is the impulse, I can't do that because they would never accept that?
I mean, it was at one point I was being extra cautious, and I think that's when Françoise and I had the talk, and she encouraged me not to self-edit, I mean, I do that anyway. I try and make myself laugh, and my sketchbooks are full of those attempts. So, I mean, that's what I'm going for. I'm not worrying too much at this point. You know, I don't mind sending way more ideas and that's the way the business works. You send way more ideas than the successful ones, you know.
when you think of this work, and I realize this question is fraught from the very beginning, just in the time that I've spent with you, but I'm going to try it anyway, which is, what are you proud of?
What am I proud of?
Yeah. That's what I thought your reaction was going to be.
Yeah. I mean, there are times when I'll look through my drawers at drawings and it's nice to see something that I pulled my hair out over and was distraught over when I sent it in, you know, that I felt I had got the drawing wrong or the idea was, you know, totally, you know, misrepresented or not staged properly. And I look at it and I'm not so hard on it. I mean, occasionally it happens that I'm proud of something, but it's ephemeral. I mean, it comes and goes. How's that?
It's a good answer. The name of the new book is Blit. It is the definitive collection of Barry Blitt's work. It is published by Riverhead Books, and it's just beautiful and delightful. Barry, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure having you on the program.
It was relatively fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Again, the name of the book is Blit. It is published by Riverhead. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.